Yeah. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on a Tuesday. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Cochran and the gang are going to be broadcasting live from the Black Hawk store right across the river on Michigan Avenue. Live in a van down by the river. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And, yeah. You know what my favorite, I believe my favorite moment from that sketch is, from what I've heard, you haven't been using your papers for writing, but for rolling doobies. You know, I can distinctly remember the first time I saw that sketch. You know, where I, did I ever tell you the story, Dan, the first time I ever saw
that
sketch?
No, I don't think you did.
Yeah, man, I was at Dirty Nelly's. Yeah. You ever been to Dirty Nelly's?
I have indeed, yes.
It's D-U-R-T. Dirty Nelly's. One of my friend's bands was playing that night, and they were on a break. And so we went to the other bar where they had the TVs on. And we were just sitting there, and then this sketch comes on, and we there were like seven of us. All of my friends were just sitting at the bar, and we were just like, what? And just falling off the chair. Everybody in the bar was laughing. I mean, like beside themselves laughing. You have a lot of time for doobie rolling when you're living in a van down by the river.
Now, was that a 1250 sketch, or was that earlier?
You know, I think it was late. I think it was a late sketch. I think it was late. Do you know who gets a writing credit or a co-creator credit for that for Matt Foley?
Bob Odenkirk.
Odenkirk, yeah. When they worked together at Second City. They came up with that. Then the very first time they did it on the stage at Second City. But as I've mentioned before, Dan, we've talked about this before. If you watch that sketch, clearly David Spade and Christina Applegate are gone. Like, they can't look at Farley. They've got their eyes down, especially Spade. Spade is laughing his ass off during the entire sketch. Who's the only person that doesn't break in that sketch?
Phil Hartman.
But for those of you who have seen the first Matt Foley sketch, the first one is by far the best. In dress rehearsal, Farley didn't go through the table. You know, I'm here, you're there, I'm here. And then he goes through the table. He didn't go through the table during dress. So he told the prop guys to put in a breakaway table and not tell anybody else. So when you the next time you watch that sketch, which I could watch it hourly, the next time you watch that sketch, realize that nobody knew that Farley was going to go through that table. And so that's that's why the reaction is so spectacular when he goes through that table. Yeah, Dirty Nelly's. That was where I was when I saw that sketch. So, Dan, where did you find this common universe theories thing?
The usual, Mental Floss.
Mental Floss. Now, this Pixar one, the first one that's on the list, this one we've talked about before, at least you've expounded upon, correct?
Yeah, that was, I think, the most well-known of all of these five.
John Negroni is responsible for what is probably the most talked-about same-universe theory. While he didn't come up with the initial idea, he spent a year mapping a timeline. He spent a year mapping a timeline?
It's pretty intense.
The theory starts with Brave, which establishes the rules for human-like animals and the magic that brings inanimate objects to life. We see the logical progression in a world in which humans and animals could communicate with Remy and Ratatouille, and then in Up with the collar technology that works as a translator. From there, we see further technology that works, further advancement of animal and artificial intelligence in Finding Nemo and The Incredibles, leading us to the flagship Pixar Enterprise Toy Story. The Incredibles establishes a story of a fight against superhumans, and the story of Woody and Buzz furthers perhaps the central conflict of this long and winding story, robots versus humans. Maybe not robots exactly, but the sentient non-human world. Toys, cars, and later on an actual robot goes by the name of Wall-E. In brief, the world eventually becomes uninhabitable, so humans abandon the planet to save the species. Then at the end of Wall-E, we see a tiny little seedling spring to life that bears a notable likeness to the one in A Bug's Life. As the planet is reclaimed by all things organic, new life forms develop. Hello, Monsters, Inc. Man, that's a lot of time. That's a lot of thought process being spent on that.
About a year's worth, maybe.
Man. I've never made that connection before. So the plant that Wall-E has resembles from A Bug's Life?
The tree from A Bug's Life where the majority of the film takes place.
Is that right?
Yep.
I haven't seen A Bug's Life in a long time. I love that movie, but I haven't seen it in a long time. Wall-E, I watch daily. Well, not daily, but I watch it a lot.
All that's on at your home is the Matt Foley sketch and Wall-E.
Wall-E, and Wendy and Lisa. Wow, that's crazy. I mean, that's really crazy. So who is this John Negroni guy? Do you know who he is?
It's just a guy, you know.
Dude?
Yeah, a freelance writer who, you know, does things like this.
Yeah, clearly had a lot of time on his hands. Now, one more time, Dan. What is the, a couple of the universes that you say
people who appear in multiple commercials.
Right.
They share a universe. So the woman in the Lowe's ad where their fridge is vibrating and it's too loud and they can't hear each other and they're talking about how they need to get a new fridge.
Yeah.
She works at Destination XL, the big and tall men's store. You can see her folding clothes at one point. So it's a good thing Lowe's has good prices on their appliances because she's working retail. And, you know, that's not the most, you know, you don't earn a ton of money during retail. So the fact her and her husband can afford a new refrigerator thanks to Lowe's is a good thing.
Oh, man. Now, is Lily in any other commercials, or is she
Lily? The big four we mentioned earlier do not appear in any other.
They're just
ads.
In their
they're,
own.
They're
Boy,
exclusive.
If they cross paths, that would be like if you crossed in streams on Ghostbusters, right? Wouldn't something crazy happen if those four ladies suddenly...
The universe would cease to exist.
All right. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Hanging out till 5. So, Dan, here's one of these theories, the common universe theories, that I find kind of interesting. The Indiana Jones, Star Wars, and E.T. theory. Now, were you aware of this?
I was not aware of this one.
You can almost imagine Steven Spielberg and George Lucas on a soundstage somewhere mapping this one out and having a nice laugh. Turns out there are tons of clues potentially connecting these classics, including Indy's visit to Club Obi-Wan from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. That was the name of the club at the beginning of the movie?
I had not caught that, but apparently so.
Okay. A hieroglyphic of R2-D2 and C-3PO and Princess Leia in Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost. Wait, hold on a second. When did they change the damn title to Indiana Jones and the... It's Raiders of the Lost Ark. But I remember that. Do you remember that? That in Raiders?
I do not remember that either.
Really? That was one of those things that was like when it first came out, it was like, oh, it's R2-D2. E.T. recognizing Yoda and wheezing out home on Halloween, and later on, members of E.T.'s species appearing in the Galactic Senate at the Phantom Menace. Well, I don't think I remember anything from the Phantom Menace, except that I hated it. The grand theory argues that the crystal skull aliens from Indiana Jones brought the story of Star Wars with them to Earth, built the pyramids, and immortalized the story of C-3PO and company through wall carvings. What? Okay. I don't even know what's going on anymore. By the way, if you'd like to see this list of the five common universe theories for movies, and perhaps leave a message for Dan explaining his commercial common theories, you can do that at
Facebook. It's no questions. It's fact.
It's fact.
It's fact.
Facebook.com/NickDShow. Let's say good morning to the great Orion Samuelson. Hello, Big O.
Well, good morning.
How are you?
I was a Star Wars fan.
Are you?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Star Wars, Star Trek. Yeah.
I'm more of a Star Trek fan than I am a Star Wars fan.
Well, particularly with Jean-Luc Picard. I liked him.
Did you like Next Generation?
Yes.
Oh, wow. See, I'm a Shatner guy.
Oh, you're a Shatner. Well, I like Shatner,
I like
too,
Kirk. I'm a Kirk guy.
Jean-Luc Picard brought a different...
He did. No, he was great. Yeah. There's no question about it. You know, since we lost Leonard Nimoy a few weeks ago, in May for our film club, we're showing Star Trek II Wrath of Khan.
Are you really?
Yeah.
I may have to show up.
You should. I mean, there's not going to be a dry eye in the house because Spock dies at the end of that movie.
Yeah.
So everybody's going to be like, we're all going to be crying.
What's the date on that?
We don't know yet.
Okay.
We're planning it around the Hawks playoff schedule.
Oh, all right.
So it'll be the first Tuesday of May, but it'll be at a Tuesday in May.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mark
tonight,
it down when
tonight
you get
Planet
it.
Of the Apes, another great sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really didn't get into that, into the Planet of the Apes thing.
But,
no, I really didn't. Mm. But I guess I like the space machines a lot more in the Star Trek and in the Star Wars.